This Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! Yeah. Mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and Live Feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
Yeah, I did that. You know what got me? Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, brought me right here to the studio. 10 miles on my hands and freaking knees, folks, and here I am. But I found the man in the basement. I found my co-host, Mr. Chris Switzer. How are you, Chris?
Doing well.
And that's tough
Doing
enough.
Doing very well. You know, 3,000 listeners can't be wrong, but boy, oh boy, it'd be really good if they listened to this program, wouldn't it?
We could find out for sure if they did. You are correct.
But yes, it has been an exciting time. I've moved to a different location here, and it's nice because we should have taken acoustics into consideration because I can hear quite an echo. I'm like, wow, it's like I'm in the gymnasium this time.
Yeah. A little bit of Dynoc on the walls will help, you know.
Oh, yeah. How do I sound?
Nice and flat. Perfect. Just better than always. Yeah, yeah. Very good.
Oh, good. Yeah.
The fluorescence,
so how was your week?
The fluorescents above you are very very soothing, I must say.
Oh, thank you.
Well, for me, because I'm looking at them.
Oh,
those. I just see these two big white lasers above you.
My blaring fluorescent lights that are here. Yes,
right.
If this was a visual medium, you'd all be sterilized by
now. Oh, yeah, hell yeah. Well, I tell you know, things are doing good. People can give us a call for a little bit at 516-572-7440. We're going to have a great guest today. We're going to have Mr. Joe Hines. Joe had written a book about G-bodies, and now he's got another one coming out about late model Hemi engine swaps.
And that sounds good.
And I tell you, with all the talk about social media and the good and the bad of it, this was another one of the good stories for the good side. I had been following, I mentioned this on the show a few weeks ago, I had been on Instagram following this, you know, there's a lot of things that pop up in your feed that, you know, it's their metric, how they find things that you like. And
sure.
And there was a site that I liked. I liked a few of the things, and I made a comment, and it ended up that it was Joe, and he got back to me and said, hey, you know, messaged me and said, hey, I was on your show a few years ago, and I wrote my Buick book, and, you know, so we reconnected, and I said, oh, my, holy cow, you know, that it's almost like a double blind test. You know, we have guests on the show, and we like what they do, otherwise we wouldn't have them as guests, but now... Right. Here was something, another feed that he had done. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know his name. I didn't remember anything. But I liked what he was doing on his Instagram feed with his other cars, and it just kind of showed that, yeah, you know what? If you like what the guy does twice without knowing who it is, you must really like what he's doing. So,
no, I agree. That is actually the greatest test when you see the work again and you appreciate it and know that you appreciated the person in the past and you didn't know that that was the same work of that person.
And it wasn't even related. Like, you know, I knew him from this G-body book. You know, it's a great book. GM G-body, say that five times fast. GM G-body performance upgrades, 1978 to 87. It's all about how to modify those G-bodies, the Regals, the Montes, the Malibus, you know, the GMC Caballeros. When was the last time you sold one of those?
Yeah, that was that's an El Camino, right?
Yeah,
that's
guess
an El Camino clone. Those cars are great. Yeah. I always loved those cars from those years because they were small, they were easy to work on, they rusted. Try and find a set of doors for a Monte Carlo SS, you'll be looking for a long time, at least a good set of doors. But it's a great platform. It was still a body on frame. They were indestructible. Great car, and they're cheap. Great platform to start on. In comparison to everything else, they're fairly cheap.
The only thing I didn't prefer about them, because I'd worked on a few back in the day, and I still do, is that's when the interiors got very plasticky, and they were kind of rattly and creaky and kind of cheap, I thought. That's the only thing I didn't like.
Yeah, no, because all it looked like was a piece of 4x8 plywood.
Flat,
and they stuck the gauge in front of you, and then they put this other block of wood in between the seats for your radio. No, I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I agree with you there. The interiors, and the interiors were a lot to be desired. And I always prided GM on their interiors.
Yeah.
Compared to like Ford or Chrysler. To me, like Ford in the 60s had the worst interiors, as far as I was concerned. And in the late 60s, Chrysler had the worst interiors. But GM always kind of held straight. They always held tried and true up until like the 80s.
And I guess the beauty of that is not only did they have the best, but because there were different divisions, each division you could tell they had their own signature type of interior. You know, you could tell a Chevy from a Buick, from a Pontiac, from an Olds, from a Caddy. You know, they were all a little bit different, and based on the stature of that car in the GM ranks.
No, true. And the funny thing was, in those cars, you really, almost in a way, you couldn't tell. Like, all they did was they kept the same layout. They changed a little bit here and there. Like the Grand Prix interior was like a little wider, had a couple of wood grain accents, had the air conditioning vents in the usual Pontiac place. But the Buick compared to the Monte Carlo, they were pretty much, or the Oldsmobile, they were pretty much the
same. Well, Buick and Olds, but I'm thinking like the seating, like, because I remember back in the 80s, the trend with the street rods and the guys that were building like the Victorias, the Crown Vics, the Vickies, and the, if they built a car not as a hot rod, but as a driving car, you know, they put a 350 in it with maybe a TPI engine or something and a set of, you know, appliance wheels, they open the door and you'd see like, oh my God, that's an old Calais seat. You know, you'd see like the button tuck velour and like, yeah, that's an Oldsmobile. You know, that overstuffed cushiness like Pontiac did, the pillowy. They actually had those pillows sewn onto the back.
Oh yeah. You know who came out with that first? The Imperials.
Okay.
Chrysler Imperials came out with that. Cadillac was starting to do that in the mid-70s. I remember a buddy of mine had a Fleetwood Brougham that had that Imperial-like pillowy, way too comfortable, way too cushy, couch-like seats.
And right.
You kind of sunk in it, like,
yeah.
You'd sit down and then you'd drop like another 3 inches, like, you had to raise the seat up every little bit, so often, because the pillows would just curl around your legs. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. Hey, you know.
It's true.
That aside, we'll get into that with Joe. I had something I noticed. It was one of my, one of my observations on the road, if you will.
Oh, Ray's observations on the road. We need some sounder for that.
We do. Tell me if you've experienced this, and you have to be in the right vehicle. And I was driving the FJ.
All right.
And I noticed that in general, traffic.
So wait a minute. If you were driving the FJ, then other drivers assumed you were some hippie type of tree hugging environmentalist.
Or some manic off-roader. Well, then again, you know, mine isn't decked out with all the decals and the jack and all the off-road stuff, you know, the survivalist kits. No, mine isn't decked out with that. It's all pretty.
Just like when you drove your Mazda. Your Mazda 3, everybody thought you were some greasy kid with a little hot rod rice rocket.
Very true. Well, I've noticed just like with the FJ, and I guess you get that if you're driving a Bronco or a truck, people tend to go away from you. They move away from you because they know if they're behind you, they're stuck. They can't see through me. Everything is black. Right. The window's black. And I've had people right on my tail. I'm thinking, yeah, stay there because my cruise control is locked at 62. And yes, there's about a, you know, there's probably 500 feet between me and the next car. And I'm staying
You're that annoying driver that I curse at.
And then you see when the guy tries to like move around to look behind. And I've done that in my mind. I was the guy in the Mazda doing that. Like, get out of my way. And then he'll slingshot around. You go on, go have your ball. Right. But I noticed, this is the thing I noticed the other day. That happened. A couple cars had zipped around me because they didn't want to be behind a big SUV. But Jeeps, guys in Jeeps and other vehicles like that, if they happen to get behind me, they tend to just stay behind me. And I think that's that mentality of like all of the llamas going up the hill together. I really do. I think because you see like on videos that I watch on Instagram, the FJ Club, clubs around the world will always post pictures. And guys will go out on an outing for the weekend, whether they're in Jeeps or FJs or whatever the hell they're in. And as they do, they follow each other up these trails and, you know, they trail ride and they're there to help each other. So I noticed the Jeep guys will stay behind me. I don't know if it's just an inbred thing, you know, because I'm not going to stay behind them necessarily. And the cars are just like, they got no time for me. They want to just get away from me. So
that's funny. I always take it one step further. I always think people are generally pack animals. They travel like buffalo. Because if you ever notice, when you're on a highway, it's usually clusters of cars that you see patterns of. There was a time I had that Riviera. It was an 86 Riv, and I had a problem with the electronics on it where the car wouldn't do more than 50 miles an hour. I don't even remember how I fixed it, but I do remember I was bopping along at like 50 miles an hour and it was cool. I was doing the speed limit and everything was fine. And I noticed like clusters of cars would pass me.
Yeah.
And then they would go past like vroom, 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 vroom. Everybody would go by doing their 60 plus. And then then it would get quiet. And you'd see taillights way ahead of you, and you'd see headlights behind you, and then maybe it took like another 5 or 10 minutes or so, and then boom, 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 another bunch of 60 miles.
I will tell you, that's not your car. It's not the car. Because I see that now, and again, in the FJ, I tend to drive slower because I'm trying to get another tenth of a mile per gallon. Really, it doesn't get good gas mileage, so I'm...
Right, I was going to say, you're going from 4 to maybe 4.5.
Well, yeah, so it's not that bad. But, you know, I just filled it up yesterday, and I got 17 this time around, which isn't bad for that thing.
No, that's what I get with the police truck.
So, again, you know,
17.
I stick it in cruise, and I get in the middle lane, and that's where I stay. And I notice the same thing. Those cars are rushing up behind you, and they're scattering around you. It's like looking at a magnet demonstration when you have, like, when you have iron filings and a magnet. Everything goes around. And then it's like...
Right, it's polarized.
And you find yourself in this nice little void of no traffic. Yeah. And then again,
and it's nice.
And you see the lights behind you, and you know, okay, the next wave is coming up. They do the same thing. And typically, unless it all stacks up ahead because all the idiots, like, you know, crashed into each other, you can sometimes go a good distance doing that. And it's just a matter of just keeping your course, not the course that they're doing.
Right.
I agree.
Because I was always in that crowd of people. And I found that when you're in that crowd and you're bobbing and weaving and ducking and dodging with them, if you get home, you're tired. But when I was doing this 50 miles an hour, just cruising along in my own little world, I got home. I kind of felt good. I was like refreshed, like, oh, wow, I didn't have to deal with those clown heads.
Right.
It was like, it was nice. It wasn't so bad. And now I know why old people do it, because now I'm back to doing the same thing I was doing before and shucking and jiving with the rest of them. And
there you go.
And I'm going to start driving at 50 miles an hour and not really caring anymore and let the buffalo go past me. Vroom, vroom, who cares?
Right.
Let them all go. But yeah, you're right. There are patterns. With all bets are off with my car, so I really can't. I don't really see them. I'll see them in Dawn's Mazda, and I've come to realize in my wife's car, people have they get in your way in that car because I don't think it's friendly. I think it's friendly and not nasty like mine. But go right ahead.
All right. Well, I tell you what didn't get in our way, and it's the phone. So we're gonna go to the phones and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, this is Joe Hines.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Joe!
Doing well, sir.
Excellent. It's great to reconnect with you again on
yes, sir.
Instagram and now on the radio show again. So, again, we talked about your book. Tell us what you've been up to. Tell us, what's going on in your world, because I know you're doing some cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, a few years ago, I mean, back when we talked last, I had my own shop and decided I kind of wanted to make this more of a hobby again and get into some of my own projects. And I've sort of transitioned. I closed my shop and now I'm working for Holly in the tech department.
Right.
And I've been there for, you know, about a year and a half or so now.
Okay.
And basically leading a team of techs and helping them with complex issues that come up, you know, diagnosing EFI issues, things like that, installation problems, that sort of thing. But I've been doing that and been working on some personal projects. I've got a 72 Gremlin X I've been building with my son for several years that is doing some chassis fabrication. It's basically building it for road race, drift, hill climb, land speed, basically anything we can throw at it.
Yeah, now that's how I found you again, because on Instagram, I didn't mention it before, I figured I'd let you do it. I found your page, the gremlin shaped object underscore between everything, and really liked what I saw. I've always been a gremlin fan. I just like the body style. I do. And said, wow, this is cool. And then to find out that we actually knew you was like, wow. Like I said, that's like a double blind test. Now you know that it's going to hit. So.
Right.
Yeah, that's what led you to take on a gremlin for that project? Because a lot of people, you know, that's one of those love it or hate it cars, and obviously, I love it.
You know? And yeah, we're also talking about a car that's not really known for its handling.
Well, not no, but Joe's building a chassis for this thing, so he's doing a chassis John to it. It's going to be all new.
Oh, got it. There's nothing AMC
correct.
About this gremlin, I'm sure.
Right. No, nothing at all. Just the body shell, pretty much. And that, hence the name, the gremlin-shaped object. This started as I wanted to build a project with my son. He was a teenager, you know, was creeping up on 16. I'm like, we need to build you a car. And, you know, there were some other projects that were going along at the same time. You know, his interests were going in a lot of different directions. And this one started off as being a high school driver. And originally it was going to have a bolt-in control freak front suspension. And we were going to do a mild LS, you know, just easy swap, good parts availability, reliability, all of that. But the more I thought about it, I mean, I'm not really a purist, but I'm like, you know, it would be kind of cool if we could sort of at least keep it all in the same family and put one of the new Hemis in it, new at the time. And, you know, a 5.7 Hemi crossed my path, and we decided to go that route. And then sort of one thing led to another. And my son had mentioned, well, I'd eventually like to put turbos on this. And I'm like, well, if we're building the car, I mean, it'd be easier to plan for that now. And it, as the project grew and, you know, it went from being a driver to, honestly, it was shelved for a while. My son joined the Marine Corps, just finished an enlistment, so we're kind of back on it together now. But our interests have both drifted, no pun intended, towards drift, road racing, hill climb, that sort of spectrum. I mean, you know, I grew up with more drag racing. That was more, you know, the typical hot rodder's interest. But as I've gotten older, my interests have grown, and I want to go around curves fast.
Yeah,
I'm, you know, not just in a straight line. And this thing has morphed from being, you know, what was an original 304 two-barrel Gremlin X to a 5.7 Hemi twin-turbo, air-to-water intercooled, independent suspended on both ends. I mean, we're basically building a chassis using an Art Morrison C6 Corvette-based clip. I'm building the rear also with Corvette components, but with a little bit of a twist. You know, I mentioned, you know, the interest in hill climb and road racing. And one of my son's other vehicles that, he's just in love with is a, Evo 8, you know, a little Mitsubishi. And they're neat cars. They're fun to drive, but the durability just really wasn't there. But he loved that all-wheel drive aspect, and I'd driven it and loved it too. So we're taking on the challenge of making this Gremlin all-wheel drive.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
There is going to be a Dutchman, what's essentially intended as an IRS 9-inch center section, front and back, with Porsche 930 style CVs. And we are, this is still in the works, but we're adapting a Nissan, a Tesla all-wheel drive system, you know, like R33, R34 style, to a Tremec T56 Magnum.
So this kind of left that budget backyard builder area a long time ago.
It did. And you know, one thing that I have to say that's helped with that, at least as far as some of the hard parts of this, you know, the electronics. I mean, we're going to run this on a Holley Dominator EFI system, a lot of Holley components throughout. Some of the parent or sister companies are using a RacePak smart wire wiring system for it. A lot of related things. And I have to say, Holley is very generous to its tech department. And, you know, they believe that the best way for us to become familiar with the product is to give us the product to put it to the test, install it, go play with it, try to break it. Right. And that's, I've sort of taken advantage of that. And that's made a lot of this more workable. You know, there's a lot of it that is truly home built. Is it low budget? Well, it depends on what you're comparing it to.
Yeah.
If you compare it to any other V8 all-wheel drive car you can think of, there's no comparison. This is so low buck, it's ridiculous.
Mm.
I've got a friend and coworker at Holley who, a gentleman named Chris Porter, who led up the project for Detroit Speed, building Ken Block's Huna truck.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's all-wheel drive. It's got the Sedev all-wheel drive system, you know, mega buck, purpose-built race car stuff. And, I mean, that thing, I don't know what the budget was, but it's high six figures, if not seven figures, with everything they did with it. And this is nowhere even approaching that. But still, I'm thinking that, you know, it's going to be in line with the typical pro touring, you know, higher end pro touring car.
Yeah.
And it's not really something I would put in the pro touring category. It's kind of beyond that. It is going to be fully drivable, but, we're sort of going for what, the big red Camaro has done in racing.
Okay.
You know, that was a car that R.J. Gottlieb and the family built originally just to road race. And it's done so much else since then. It's done land speed and hill climb, and it's got different setups for different areas. And we're not planning on changing engines or anything like that, anything drastic. But we do want to use it in a lot of different ways, take advantage. I mean, I'll be honest, we just can't afford to build a different car for everything we want.
Oh, sure, sure. Who can?
Mm-hmm. And nobody can. It's just so ridiculously expensive today to do that. So we're kind of building a one-size-fits-all. No delusion that it's going to be competitive with some of the, you know, mega-buck efforts out there, but we just want to have fun.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and with that platform, you can certainly do it. With the all-wheel drive, I mean, that's got to be a real game-changer with hill climb, you know, where...
Yeah, and the nice thing is with the Nissan system is we can pull power from the front wheels. You know, if we want to drift, you know, we can pull power completely out of the front. We can tailor it as we want. And one of the things I'm looking forward to doing is integrating this Nissan Atessa system, which is, you know, electrical and hydraulic, and sort of combining it and running it with the Holley Dominator EFI,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, as I was told in training, you know, about the Dominator, you know, it'll do just about anything you can put your mind to. And, I'm going to really push the limits of that and maybe do some things that aren't as common. You know, the car is going to have a little bit of active aero and things like that, and I'm going to use some of the capabilities of that system and the RacePak smart wire system to kind of handle all of the electrical needs and make it relatively simple.
Yeah.
You know, once it's installed and programmed, it'll be very simple.
How long have you been working on the car to date, Joe?
Well, it started 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
And it's one of those things that it's changed directions a few times, and there have been some ups and downs. You know, I closed the shop and had it in storage for a while, and I just pulled it back out of storage earlier this year. You know, I was looking at, you know, my son was ending his tour of duty with the Marine Corps, mm-hmm. and was planning on being back home, and we'd have some time to really talk about, you know, the plans for it, what direction we want to go in, and it just keeps developing. I mean, the all-wheel drive system is something that we have kind of added recently, because I started looking at it, and I'm like, you know, if we're going to do this, we need to do it now. You know, just for building the chassis around it. I love building cars. I hate going back and working on them and changing things later.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's always a problem. You do it once, doing it twice is like, but if you have to do it a third time, then it's really like a knife in the back.
Just like you, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Now, Joe, I got to ask you, did you search out the parts that you were planning on using it, or did you find the parts and go, oh, I can adapt these into the project? How was your train of thought there?
Well, a lot of it, you know, through time, it's just sort of developed into this. Originally, you know, my plan, like suspension wise, like I said, had been a bolt in, you know, basically a Mustang 2 based front clip. And I figured I'd build a 3 or 4 link and put a 8.8 out of an Explorer or something like that in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something really, really basic. And as my son started talking about drift and everything else, I'm like, okay, well, maybe, you know, maybe we should put an independent rear in it. And, you know, at one time we were planning to use a Dodge Viper based Dana 44. And that was up until very recently. That's another part that just kind of fell in my lap. A buddy was upgrading his Viper with an independent 9-inch. I got this Dana 44. I started looking at C4 Corvette parts that I could use to sort of adapt the suspension and the geometry and everything to this Gremlin. And that was the route I was going to go. I was essentially going to back half the car and put this Corvette Viper hybrid IRS in it. And while there's nothing wrong with the Viper setup, what I got to thinking about was when we started talking about going independent, going all-wheel drive, I wanted to not only have the same gear ratios front and back, I wanted to be able to get a wider choice of differentials, you know, so that I can tailor that a little bit better. And I wanted to get, you know, essentially the same units front and back. And for packaging reasons, I started looking at fabricated 9-inch housings and then realized that Dutchman already made one that was perfect. It's basically a cast aluminum housing that has provisions to bolt on brackets or, you know, for mounting, and is designed for use as an IRS.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is just basic 9-inch stuff, you know, and well, with some 930 Porsche based axles from the driveshaft shop. That's another kind of expensive chunk in there.
But, yeah, sure.
Yeah, because I am thinking about what you're talking about, and I'm thinking about how you are going to physically take all of this equipment and stuff it in the size of a gremlin. I am just, well, the mind is boggling as I'm hearing you and just hearing,
yeah,
how, just you, how you're talking about the upgrades and talking about how you're planning this is just
right.
Extraordinary. I have so many questions.
If you take a look at my Instagram page, and it's you know, the gremlin shaped object, There's a picture there that shows roughly where the motor plate is going to be installed. And the motor plate is essentially about, if I remember correctly, about 7 inches ahead of where the firewall would normally be.
Wow.
That's so this thing is practically this thing is practically mid-engined. As a matter of fact, our preliminary measurements, and this is not dialed in as of yet, this was even pre all-wheel drive, so some of those measurements are going to change anyway. But we were even figuring then that the drive shaft center to center on the U-joints was going to be approximately 11 inches.
Wow, yeah.
So there's an extreme amount of engine setback, you know, to allow, you know, to allow for the differential clearance. I mean, granted, there's still going to be a lot of creativity with packaging and everything else. There's a lot of hardware. I mean, turbos and air to water intercooler, heat exchangers, pumps,
yeah,
all sorts of stuff, yeah, competing for space. And the Gremlin package is not, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it's a compact car. It's
sure.
There's not a lot of room there to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's taken some real creativity to get it all in there.
Well, I'll tell you what else is the packaging based on what takes creativity. It's our bottom of the hour break that we need to take. So we're going to queue up Chris, Joe, if you'll sit with us for a minute. But first, okay, I have to tell you about a show on this fine station called Your Family's Health that airs Tuesdays at 3. You'll hear Professor Janine Cook-Garrard from the NCC Nursing Department, where she discusses health issues concerning us all, and God knows I can use some of that on most days. So, Chris, do you have the voodoo that you do, the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour, to share with us?
Well, of course, Ray. Today, this Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour crowd are drivers who inadvertently lost a set of car keys. Did you place the car keys down and totally forgot where you left them? Did you leave the key fob somewhere in your pants or jacket and can't remember which, or in someone else's pants? Are you sitting in front of the house patiently waiting for the locksmith? Did you call the dealer and find out and fall down when you heard the price of a replacement key fob for your Mercedes? Holy smokes. Well, if you're still searching aimlessly for your car keys, stop for a second and pat yourself on the back because you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Nice.
There you go.
Yeah, that encompasses all at one time or another. All right, so Joe, hang with us for a minute. We have to take a quick break. We're going to make it a little shorter than our usual one, and we will be back with more Motormouth Radio with our guest Joe Hines from the Gremlin-Shaped Object and Holly Corporation, Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino. So let's wrap this segment up, and we'll be back in a minute. Keep it where you got it on 90.3 WHBC.
Carl Anthony with Automoblog and Auto Vision News, and you're listening to Ray and Chris on Motormouth Radio, WHPC 90.3 FM.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the expert at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y sí, hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motormouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer, 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
Yeah, we may learn a few things ourselves from Chassis John, especially if we learn all sorts of stuff. So we are back. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, we're with Mr. Joe Hines, and we're talking about gremlins and projects that are just fairly mind-boggling. So
that's for sure.
So Joe, out of this project now has come out of the creation a new book that you're working on, correct?
Well, they sort of started around the same time, and this car was part of the inspiration for the book. Many years ago, this was after finishing my G-body book, Car Tech, G-body performance upgrades. I started getting a lot of interest in the Gen 3 Hemis, your 2003 and newer 5.7, 6.1, 6.4, and now 6.2 Hemis. And, they've really come a long way in that time. There wasn't much aftermarket. There wasn't a lot of support initially. And now that's changed. Holley's one of the companies that has done a tremendous amount, bringing out mounts and headers and transmission cross members and all sorts of, needed parts for doing those swaps more easily, in some of the more common applications, your traditional Mopar A, B, and E bodies, your Dodge D100 trucks, things like that. But we're starting to see a lot of what was seen in the LS market, where instead of people just, initially, when the LSs came out, you'd see them put into mostly just Chevrolets, but then people started putting them in Nissan 240SXs and Mustangs and just whatever. And it became, is almost like seeing a 9-inch Ford rear end under some other brand. I mean, it became like the universal engine swap. And the Gen 3 Hemi hasn't come quite that far, but still, it's the power production, the aftermarket parts availability, and the ease of swapping it. All of this has improved so much. I mean, even in the last year, that I saw where there was really a need for a book to show, the average enthusiast, what they're getting into, what combinations work, and how to better plan their project and see it through to completion. Because, with Mopar stuff has always been a little bit more complex. It's not always quite as simple as, like, say, a General Motors application to start with. And then you throw in, their corporate changes, their Daimler-Benz Association and now, and then Fiat and everything else. There's a lot that has gone into that, a lot of technology that's been brought in, and it's made it a little bit more complicated for the swappers.
Yeah, Joe, that's the thing. A company like Holley has always been at the forefront of helping the hot rodder and all do things that weren't in the textbook, so to say, which is great. And I got to say, you have Chris weeping like a little schoolboy because he's on that other end. He actually has a Chrysler C-body, and that's the – you want to talk about a bastard child of Chrysler's? They don't make nothing for those cars.
Nothing.
I mean, the carburetor, yeah, but that's about it.
Right. Well, that's one thing. I haven't heard anything specific on C-body mounts, but a lot of the stuff is pretty similar. We are seeing some C-body swaps that people have done, not quite as common, but, interestingly, we're seeing, Hemi swapped in places you just would have never thought. I mean, a friend of mine has done a project called the Hell National. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh, but no, I haven't.
He's actually up, I believe, in New Jersey, Enrique Ojeda. It's a 87 Grand National that he Hellcat swapped.
Uh-huh, okay.
And, now he's actually got the supercharger off of it. He's building the motor, and he's doing a twin turbo setup going for even more power.
Wow.
But that's something that I didn't anticipate ever seeing.
No. No, you think it would stay within the family, the GM family, like an LS, of course. But
right.
Yeah.
But they're becoming more and more common. I've seen third and fourth gen F bodies with Gen 3 Hemi swaps.
Wow.
Sorts of vehicles are being swapped now. And I think part of it is just the LS thing, as great as the engines are, it's become kind of a me too thing.
Yes.
Where everybody,
yes.
You know, it's, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you'd go to a car show and you'd be like, oh, cool, that car's got an LS in it. Now, you know, it's exactly the opposite. You walk through there and I'm like, oh, cool, this thing still has a small block Chevy.
Right. And actually, in the 7-Eleven by my house, they moved the traditional small block Chevy pistons off to the corner. Now they have the LS stuff right there. I mean, that's right. How easy it is to get this stuff.
Sure, sure. And you know, I don't think the LS, or excuse me, I don't think the Hemis would get to that point where it's just like every car to show has one in it.
Right,
they've definitely picked up a lot. I mean, it's always going to require a little bit more effort. And, you know, some of that has to do with transmission controls and the electronics end of it. But there's some companies that are working to address some of those concerns. I mean, you know, Holley's is working on transmission controllers, have been for a while, on some of the Mopar electronic transmissions. There's a company called Sound German Automotive that has a standalone controller that will allow the 8HP 70 and 90 transmissions like you'd find behind a Hellcat or any of the higher powered Mopars, where you can put that behind anything. You could put it, you know, if you had a Hemi with a carburetor, you can run it behind that. You can run it with a factory PCM. You can run it with a Holley PCM or FuelTech or whoever.
Okay.
So it's good. I mean, there's a lot of development that's coming in, and it's, you know, it's not only big companies like Holley, but, you know, some of the smaller guys that have come in and offered some innovative parts, you know, to try to make swapping easier. I mean, you know, TTI, they've been around for years in the Mopar world. They sort of pioneered the Hemi swaps, you know, with their mounts and headers, and Bouchelon Performance in South Carolina done quite a bit.
Right.
But it's really, really growing to the point that it's drawing non-Mopar people into the hobby, which I think is interesting.
That's good.
And, you know, and it's resulting in some really interesting vehicles, and just you know, kind of a refreshing change. I mean, I kind of, you know, I don't like going to a show and seeing the same engine in every car myself.
Right.
It just gets boring.
I find it interesting that a guy who's building the Gremlin says that there's some interesting changes, because that is speaking the truth for sure.
Yes. You are practicing what you're preaching as well. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, with this car, I mean, we've tried to take, you know, what will work in our application, and not really paying a lot of attention to where it comes from. I mean, granted, you know, a lot of our suspension is General Motors. You know, the transmission and center drive will be Nissan, or at least modified in some point, but based on the Nissan design. And, you know, of course, the Hemi engine itself, I mean, you know, it's again, sort of in the family, being AMC, but, you know, the AMC purists don't seem to think so. They're sick that I didn't put a 401 in this car.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. So,
I mean, you're putting the engine pretty much under the windshield.
No, that's great. You know, we met a guy at the Belmore Swap Meet who built a Pinto years ago, which actually led us to having Norm Baggy on, who did that Pinto Stampede. Remember that whole thing? But his Pinto was a replica of a race car, and the same thing. He had a 302 in it, but it was set back half under the firewall. That car had a just handle like stink. Oh, man.
Yeah. That's sort of what we've gone for with this, you know, sort of out of necessity. I mean, there was already going to be a fair amount of setback just for turbo clearance and everything. But when I really started looking at what it was going to take to make this thing all-wheel drive, I'm like, we really are going to have to make some serious changes. And, you know, the firewall was already cut out. And, you know, I was planning on building a custom firewall anyway, so that wasn't a big deal. We're planning to run something like speed glass, Lexan windows, you know, for safety. This thing's going to be going pretty fast and some pretty dangerous places. So, you know, no automotive, no OEM glass in this car.
Right.
But that also makes it easier, in this respect, because the engine's pretty tall in this car. It's got the Holley, high ram intake on it. It's going to have a shearer fab. air-to-water intercooler, which sandwiches between the upper and lower of what is already a tall intake. So it's going to stick up through the cowl quite a bit, and the windshield is going to be notched, and it's going to have like a bubble.
I like that.
Sort of a funny car style.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, you know,
definitely.
Like if Ed Roth built a funny car.
Like an early flopper, right? Yeah, yeah. So
And that's kind of what I'm going for. And the plan so far, and this is still subject to change, but the plan so far is to have sort of a more traditional looking, like a candy green paint.
Beautiful.
With a probably a green Lexan bubble.
Cool.
Over the engine. Everything's going to be sealed up. I mean, we're really trying to make this thing, you know, as aerodynamic as you can make a Gremlin.
Sure.
That's sort of a challenge in itself.
Sure.
But
you bet.
No, that's great. So let me ask you a question. Just to divert, we're talking about intakes. I want to just, because we actually only have a quarter of the show left. We're getting towards the end of the show. Just want to ask you something carburetor-based, Holley-based. You know, I had told you that I'm thinking about switching the intake system on my Pontiac, and one of the things that you had mentioned, which I've been thinking, since I have a dual quad setup, I was thinking about a dual EFI setup, dual throttle bodies, and guys have said to me, well, gee, why would you do two when you could do one that's proven, And besides being able to say to them, well, because I want to and it looks cool, I really haven't had a better answer. So can you provide one? Why would I do two instead of one?
Other than being
insane.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Honestly, the look is a lot of it. And that's what a lot of these dual quad systems are sort of designed for. I mean, it's for the guy that remembers, you know, a time when multiple carburetors were fairly commonplace, and it's just a look that a lot of us have wanted.
Right.
But, you know, they don't necessarily want the poor drivability. And, you know, granted, a good carb tuner can make a dual quad setup work on the street pretty well. You know, whether it's a low rise or a tunnel ram or whatever. I mean, we've all seen it done. It's not rocket science, but still EFI just, you know, gives you the tunability to make that a more streetable application. You know, with the sniper based setups, I mean, you've got the injectors, you know, in the throttle body unit. So plumbing wise, it's very simple. It's not any harder than a carburetor. I mean, you just need a high pressure fuel system, preferably with a return line.
Right.
And, you know, but other than that, it's not really that much more complex than a carb installation. You know, you've got minimal wiring to do, and everything else. So somebody who's not necessarily a EFI expert, you know, as long as they, you know, follow the instructions and use good wiring practices and things like that, and they've got a good sound combination to start with, you know, can have, you know, increased reliability, you know, and performance. I mean, it's not really a performance upgrade as far as, well, it's going to make more horsepower than the carb. Well, it might not. It depends on how well your carb was tuned and everything else. But, you know, it does bring other advantages with it, too, like the ability to control timing.
Right, right.
And anytime you can kind of consolidate all of that, the better. And, you know, like everybody's systems, they're all advertised as self-tuning, and that's true to a point. But for ultimate performance, I mean, it, you know, some fine tuning is always going to help.
Sure. Good things that I may be, I'll be, you know, looking into in the future. That's it's still a decision that has to be made, but it's good to know there's guys like you out there in the companies who can provide that help and guidance. So, It's good to know for us guys working at home and working in small shops and whatnot. It's comforting. Very good to know.
So, yes, sir.
So now that we're wrapping up, we have any final thoughts, Joe? How can people find you if they want to talk to you about your project? Do you encourage that type of thing, or would you rather just keep them at bay?
Oh, well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, probably the best way to contact me is through my Instagram account. You know, and it's the gremlin shaped object, you know, with underscores, but just type in the gremlin shaped object. It'll come right up. You can send me a message there.
Right.
I'll be glad to answer any questions for you. I can.
Excellent. Very good. And, yeah, hopefully that's well, we wish you lots of luck with that. And we'll keep in touch. You know, we're hooked up with CarTech, so I know when your other book is going to be released, they'll let us know that there's a pre-release, and I'll get a hold of that and be happy to read that. And of course, we'll have you back on when that comes about.
Oh,
and
great.
We'll talk about it. And and in between, anything else that comes up, we'll be following you on Instagram, and we'll see.
Okay.
And we'll keep in touch, and we'll keep you in the loop. So thanks for being a return visitor, and of course with a surprise project, which is fantastic. I love this. I love the whole idea of the Gremlin.
Yeah. Just for the fact that you came out with a book while you're doing the project.
Yeah.
There's that adds to that technology and that knowledge, which I think is extraordinary. It's well done. I'm very impressed.
I look at it like what people say to me about the things I do, and I say, okay, well, the guy's got a full-time job, he's got a family, he's building his car, and he's writing a book all at the same time. Like, how much time? That's what people say to me. How much time do you have? I'm like, not much.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I know, Ray, you don't sleep.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, very good, Joe. Well, we applaud you for that. It's a great...
Yes, thank you very much.
And keep plugging. And we'll be in touch. Thank you for coming on Motormouth Radio, and right. We'll speak with you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, Joe.
Have a great day.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Mr. Joe Hines, the gremlin-shaped object on Instagram.
Yes.
It's, what a cool project, indeed.
Yeah, so, that's true.
It gives me hope
also,
that it gives me hope that I may actually have a spark of some kind of spark of new ideas or something. Because you hear what other guys do, and then how his project changed, and you both of us were sitting here thinking without saying it, like, oh my god, how the hell did he do that? And then that, oh wow,
yeah.
So
he is taking on literally getting 10 pounds of stuff in a 5 pound bag.
Right.
And just to engineer it and devise it and actually first you have to think of it. You have to
That's the easy part.
Get that concept in your head, and then from there source all the parts, and then from there try and get them all together, and then from there try and get them all to work in unison, and then from there trying to wrap sheet metal around.
Make it work.
Holy smokes.
Well, I'll
tell
you.
That's crazy.
I should mention that since, as you can follow Joe on the Gremlin Shaped Object on Instagram, you can follow us at @real_. We also have _ Motormouth Radio on Instagram, and just Motormouth Radio on the web and on Twitter and on Facebook. And, that's how you find people. That's how I found Joe. And that's, you never know what's going to. You open the door on influenza. You never know who's going to walk into your life. And it's great that return people are doing that, because it makes me think that maybe we're doing something somewhat right.
It's only taken 20 years.
Yeah, we got good guests, that's for sure.
You're going to run into the same people once in a while when you've been sitting in the same studio for 20 years.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
That's for sure. But yeah, it's I'm just amazed just seeing the book, the new Hemi engine swaps. It looks like it's available on a whole different host of order of book sites, so it's easy to find. And just to know that he took that technology
out?
That he learned and
it is out already. I thought it was still in the works. I'm sorry.
It seems like you can pick it up. Let me see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I was
like
mistaken. I apologize for that. I will get in touch with CarTech.
I can add it to a cart.
Yeah, okay. I'll be in touch with CarTech, and we'll get a copy of that.
Yeah, I can add it to a cart here, so. Not that I'm going to buy it right away. I still haven't found that Hemi.
Right. Well, I was thinking that'd be a cool swap in your car. You know, take the 440 out, throw in a Gen 3 Hemi. How cool would that be?
Oh, it'd be even cooler because there's a 383 instead of a 440 in there.
Even better. Get rid of the take both of them out. Yeah. Take that 440 out of the trunk. Yeah.
But you know what? On a car like that, I would think about doing it. Just because it's so not stock. It's stock, but it's just a bunch of stock parts thrown together on a car. It's not like a legitimate of any way,
well,
shape,
that's
or
it.
Form.
Some cars warrant that customization touch where you don't even think twice about it, or others you say, maybe this one should stay original. And the car makes that decision for you oftentimes. So.
Yeah, it's the truth. It's like your car and my car, I think, are in the same boat. Like you always said about your GTO, that it was never stock. When you got it,
I don't think it was built stock.
It was already butchered. Yeah, I bought the,
it wasn't butchered. I bought the car. It was only 10 years old, and it already had a GM, you know, a Chevelle 12-volt posi in it.
When I say butchered, I say it was already messed with.
Oh, I messed
like
with
whenever,
it.
You messed with it even more. You just continued it. Right. So the car was...
It was a teenage test
like
bed.
Never, it was always... It was never left alone.
Right. No.
There was always meat hooks in it.
Like I said, it was my teenage test bed. You know, I don't like that engine. Put a small block... The Pontiac engine goes, put a small block Chevy in. Then it's like, put a Pontiac engine. Yeah, we go from a two-speed automatic, put it in a three-speed automatic that never worked. All right, out. Boom. Four-speed. Let's go. You know, and just there it went in infinitum. Yeah. So,
and I just went the completely different way with the Chrysler. It's like when I got it, someone was already turning it into a 300. So I'm like, well, what do I do?
Right.
Spend the money and turn it back into a Newport, or spend the money and keep going with the 300 dream of this long deceased previous owner? Well, let's go that way and just keep throwing 300 parts at it. Why not?
Right. Right. Well, yeah, sure.
So yeah, that's the joy of what we do, and it's funny because either way, it's fine. And there'll be that day when I go buy that 59 Buick Electra 225 convertible and just sit there and just wax it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
We'll be throwing parts at it.
So we're coming up on throwing turkey legs at Thanksgiving in another couple of weeks. We're still got a few guests kind of circling around in the clouds that stick above our heads. So nothing solid yet, but you know how that goes. It's usually determined sometimes the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So
and that's happened, or the day of.
I'm thinking about getting Carl Anthony back because they did a thing on Automobile Blog about auto insurance for cars that have over 100,000 miles. There's companies that sell insurance or like warranties to cars that have over 100,000 rolling. I know. I said the same thing. I went, huh?
Really?
We may get Carl on, but yeah, and we'll talk about that. So in the next week or so. Yeah, so Kim is coming in to do Thunder Road. She's doing the best of Springsteen and getting ready, warming up. Rob is in the other room doing something. I don't know what the heck he's doing. And
you're not sleeping.
Yeah, no. And we're going to get climb out of here. So, Chris, what do you always say that now John always says that you always say that now has become a cross-promotion thing from Playing in Traffic to Motormouth Radio about whoever's waiting for us?
Don't follow us home, but if you do, make sure it's a Hemi swap.
Got it. All right, so Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, we'll be... you ready, Kim? Okay, Kim is professional. She's always ready, unlike me, who's like, I'm not ready. Right. All right, we'll see you next week. Chris, we'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the new basement.
Oh, thanks. Enjoy the new Motormouth Radio North Studios.
All right, see you next week on 90.3 WHPC.
See you, bye.
Bye.